Welcome, everyone. It's always a treat for us to get together as a staff. And on occasions like this, when someone so special to us has offered to speak to us, it's been just a year since we got to know Myrtle Smith. And she brought her two lovely daughters, and they kind of became part of our family for several weeks, and she had some informal discussions with us. And so when she was coming again, now as a member of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship, she's hopping around the country, but made this her first stop. And we're so glad that she felt she had some time to, again, have an informal discussion with us. She's going to begin with some preliminary remarks and then just see what happens. She is from Belfast, Northern Ireland. Should have said on your announcement. We're getting our geography straightened out a little better. We put Ireland, but you know there is a difference there. She could... And so we're just going to get started. As I say, there will be a time for questions, and we just really want to give her a welcome, Mrs. Smith, Myrtle Smith.
Thank you, Wendy, for that lovely welcome. And thank you, everyone at Ten Acre, who always make me so welcome. I just love to come here. It's like coming home. So thank you for that. Now, our little get-together this afternoon, believe me, is very informal. It's so informal that I haven't what I was about to say finished on this paper. But it's something I want us all to join in together. You see, I have been thinking a lot in the last year about the subject of joy. Of how often we read about joy in the lesson sermon and thanksgiving. And I've been wondering how much attention we really pay to that. How much do we express joy? When you stop to think about it, I think we don't express it as much as we should. We feel that we can't be joyful because we've got so many problems, or there are so many problems in our world, or in our circumstances, our homes, or families, and we feel that if all these things would change, we could express joy. But really, we've got it the other way around. It took me a long time to see that. You know, they say the Irish are a bit thick, but I think maybe we're all a bit thick when it comes to that. You know, are we really listening to God? Now, if you're going through a problem right now, and I bet each and every one of you is, I wonder how I knew that. Because when we stop having problems, we'll have ascended. We won't even be here. We all think that when our problem is solved, when this thing goes away, when circumstances change, I will express joy and happiness. But that's a bit like putting oil in your car after your car starts to behave. You don't put the oil in the car afterwards. You put the oil in the car first, and then the car starts to behave. And the oil that we're talking about is the oil of gladness, the oil of joy, the oil of thanksgiving. These are the things that bring oil to the solution. So many health problems are because of dryness, a sense of drying up, brittleness of the bones, and old age and decay. They're all things that are drying up, and we need oil. Now, I know that we as Christian Scientists pray a lot with Mrs. Eddy's definition of oil in the Christian Science textbook, and that's very helpful. It's been helpful to me. But it's only in the last year that I've begun to think about this oil of gladness. and joy and thanksgiving. The Bible talks so much about joy, praise, rejoicing. It even says, enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. So if we want to enter into God's very presence, we have to do it in a spirit of thanksgiving. If we go with a heavy heart and plead with God about all our problems, we're really not entering the gates at all. Some people just coming in, I'll let them be seated. We're talking today about the subject of joy, really maintaining our joy. And I've just been talking about a verse in the Bible that says, enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. So that means if we want to feel really close to God, really feel that we're in his presence, we must do it in a spirit of joy and thanksgiving instead of a spirit of heaviness. In Proverbs, there's another verse which is a favorite of mine. It says, a merry heart doeth good like medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. So is it any wonder we suffer from dryness? A merry heart doeth good like medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. The Amplified Bible says about this verse, a happy heart is a good medicine, and a cheerful mind works healing, but a broken spirit dries the bones. Now I want to read to you what the Interpreter's Bible says about that verse. There are about three or four pages. And I'd like to read it to you because I feel that the Interpreter's Bible says it so well that I didn't need to write it at all. I'll take it from there. I let these people find a seat. It's nice to see so many of you coming out today. Good. I've been talking about a verse in Proverbs. It says, a cheerful heart. Sorry. A merry heart doeth good like medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Now this is what the Interpreter's Bible has to say about this verse. A cheerful heart is a good medicine, or as Moffat translates it, a glad heart helps and heals. A number of the Proverbs exalt the value of cheerfulness for the person who cultivates a cheerful outlook upon life. Good health is only one of the dividends paid. For the person who cultivates a cheerful outlook, so we need to cultivate a cheerful outlook. It isn't going to come all at once. And sometimes we work about being more loving. We're trying to cultivate a sense of loving. Or we're trying to cultivate a sense of peace. Well, it's exactly the same with joy. So we can cultivate a sense of joy in our life and our experience. When a person is ill, and this is all from the Interpreter's Bible, When a person is ill, God's healing power is at work in his body. But this power is often hindered when the patient becomes deeply anxious, lonely, morose, or bitter. A gloomy spirit can make it very difficult for healing power to work. Let the patient experience an inward awareness of this healing force, and let him overcome his heaviness of heart, and he will find his new outlook to be like a medicine. We as Christian Scientists often concentrate in healing the body, but I think I'm beginning to see that what we really need to do is to heal this sense of heaviness of heart and to claim the joy first, and that helps in the healing process. The Interpreter's Bible goes on to say, for many generations, healers could do very little to help men's bodies by way of medicine. Before the age of scientific medicine, the chief task of the medicine man was to do something for the spirit of man. For the most part, he used various devices to give people new assurance and to build a basis of confidence and joy. Many healers were helpful by dealing directly with men's hearts, with uplifting their spirit. Good news restores the energies of people. Have you ever noticed that? If a patient is ill, or you're ill yourself or unhappy, and you suddenly get good news, you feel so much better immediately. Good news will restore the energies of people. Good news will invigorate the flagging energies of a band of explorers. A homesick child can be changed by an unexpected visit into a dancing elf. Cheerfulness transforms life. Now, for some, it seems like folly to try to be cheerful when there's every reason for gloom, doom, and heaviness of heart. They feel there's a lack of realism in trying to smile when the facts seem to call only for weeping. An individual may affirm that he is temperamentally not the optimistic type, and that he should not be expected to serve the Lord or himself with gladness. But a spirit of cheerfulness is not something that is automatic or an individual result of particular events. The same circumstances may cause one person to be glum and yet not prevent another person from being cheerful. Cultivating a cheerful outlook in life is as much a deliberate act as is the attempt to control one's temper, or to the determination to be compassionate towards people in need. This good medicine cannot be brewed in a herb shop, encased in a capsule and swallowed. It is the product of a will that refuses to give way to gloom and doom, and it grows from a faith that all things can be made to work to some good end as one cooperates with God. This is still the Interpreter's Bible I'm reading from. During the pre-war years, a group of nurses in the Ellen Mitchell Memorial Hospital in Burma discuss this question during their Tuesday morning Bible hour. What does it take to make a Christian? They all agreed that repentance and acceptance of forgiveness put one into a Christian fold. But then they asked what it takes, as the days go on, to build up an even stronger Christian personality. They listed over 25 characteristics that are needed. Faith was placed first, followed by service and love. But Dr. Martha Gifford, who reported this experience in a communication to the Women's American Baptist Foreign Mission Society, then wrote, "Some were convinced that cheerfulness must surely be a part of a Christian personality, especially to those who work among the suffering. Who ever knew a grumpy old grouch who cranks all the time? Help a sick person to get well. It is the merry heart that doeth good like a medicine." And we decided that no matter what the circumstances, a smile 3 times a day and at bedtime should be a minimum in a Christian hospital. We also advised a standing order for extras to be given whenever circumstances should demand. A glad heart of this type helps and heals the body in which it beats. It also helps those who come into the circle of this influence. Now that was all from the Interpreter's Bible about that verse that I quoted. A merry heart doeth good like medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Make sure that you're all taking great doses of the oil of gladness every day. Let that be your medicine. It oils your body. It oils your mind. It oils your whole experience. Like I talked about with the car, we pour the oil in first for the car to run well. We don't pour the oil in after the car starts running well. It's the other way around, and the oil is the oil of gladness. Just try it. Try it out for yourselves. Several years ago, about 8 years ago, I was working at Hawthorne House in England as a house mother to the nurses there. And one of the perks of my job was that 4 of my children could come and visit me at the weekends. And one Saturday they came to visit me, and it was a very wet, gloomy day, and we decided to go to a big shopping mall nearby. And I had been reading in the local newspaper that it was Smile Week. And as we were walking towards the bus, I began to discuss this with my teenage children. And I said, "You know, there's great power in a smile. If you smile at someone and you really mean it, they must respond, they'll smile back." So my teenage children said, "I don't believe that. That's nuts. If you smile at people, they'll get you locked up. They think there's something wrong with you." And I began to think, isn't that a disgrace that young people feel that way, that you shouldn't really smile at people? And I said to them, "Well, you try it, it works." And they said, "We've got a better idea, you try it. And we'll see if it works." So we proceeded to the bus to go to the shopping mall. And I said, okay, I'm going to try it. And they said, well, we're not walking with you. We walk just behind and we watch what happens. So they were walking one behind the other. And there's Mother Hen out in the front. So first of all, a lady came up with a dog. And I smiled at her, a nice warm smile. Well, she stopped and she looked all round, as if to say, who is she smiling at? But suddenly she got the message and she smiled back. Then I met two teenagers. And I smiled at them and their response was very quick. And then a couple more people and I smiled at them. And I noticed that little children were the people who responded most quickly. By this time we'd reached the bus stop. As I said, it was a really wet day and there was an Indian man getting on the bus with three little children and piles of shopping. He looked absolutely wed down. So I walked up to the bus stop and smiled at him. And suddenly this man scowled at me. It gave me such a look as if to say, who is this mad woman that's smiling at me? And we got onto the bus and he sat in the long seat with all his children and all his shopping. And my children walked to the back of the bus. They sat in the back row and I sat in the one front and they were sitting behind me saying, see, it doesn't work. That poor man is horrified. He thinks you're trying to get off with him. Don't do it anymore or you're not our mother. We're not with you. When all of a sudden the penny dropped, this little man got the message. And he stood up on the bus and he smiled and he waved. And then his children smiled and they waved. And the other people in the bus thought he was smiling and waving at them. And they all began to smile and wave. And my kids were said, okay, we believe you, don't do it anymore. You proved your point. But you see, the whole bus was smiling. And I said, you see, that's just the power of a smile. Look what a smile does. So be determined to smile more. And I found them in the shopping center when they thought I wasn't looking, smiling at people. And it really did work. Talking about smiling and being happy, I remember once I went to a seminar at Claremont School in England. It was for the Christian Science Monitor. And some people had come over from Boston for this. And this speaker was telling us, and I hope I've got the story right, he was telling us that he had a job with the Christian Science Monitor and he worked in Boston. And one day he was driving a long distance and he had an hour to kill between one little town and the next. So he decided, as he had an hour to spend, that he would try to find out if there was any Christian Science activity in this little town. And he stopped and he looked up Yellow Pages. It said there was a society there. So he went along, but it was all locked up and closed up. And he wondered how he could find a Christian scientist. So he went to the post office and he asked the man in the post office, do you have any Christian scientists live here? And he said, well, I know of one. We deliver the monitor to it. And he gave him the name of this woman. So he looked her up in the telephone book. He introduced himself. He said, I represent the Mother Church and I would like to know if there's much activity among Christian scientists in this area. And she said, no, there's not. We've only got a little society and there are only about 5 members and there's not much activity going on. He said, well, could I meet with you? Could I drive out to your home? No, she said, that wouldn't suit me at all. He said, well, could you meet me at the church? She said, well, that would be silly because it's all locked up. he said, well, could we have a cup of coffee in town? She said, no. He said, well, could you just meet me at my car? I'd just like to talk to you for 15 minutes about activity in Christian Science in your area. She said, I could tell you in 2 minutes. There's no activity. Very little activity. He said, I would like you to come and meet me anyway. So she came down to meet him at his car. Now, he was about 6'3". And he was leaning on his car. And he said, up came this tiny little woman. And he said she was all bent over. So to not embarrass her, he sort of crouched down. So that he was looking right into her face. And they were standing in the street. And he said to her, tell me about your little society. And she said, well, we've only got 5 or 6 members. And she said, out of that, I'm on the board. And I play the organ. I'm Sunday school superintendent. And well, she went through about 6 or 7 jobs that she had to do in this little society. So still crouching down, he looked in her face and he said, aren't you grateful that out of your whole time, God has chosen you to do all those jobs for him? He said, she looked up at him, she said, yeah. And he said, well, honey, you better tell your face and your voice because they haven't got the message. And he said that suddenly this little woman started to laugh, and he laughed, and they laughed so much that they were both crying, and they had to hold each other up in the street. And he got in the car, he could hardly see to drive, he drove away, and about a month later, he had a letter from this woman. She said, I want to tell you, I haven't stopped laughing since you left. And thank you so much, she said, you helped me to see how burdened I have become in my work. And she said, now I'm doing each task with joy. I'm putting joy into it. And she said, by the way, I've straightened up. Wasn't that nice? She'd straightened up. She'd let go this false sense of burden and began to do whatever she had to do with joy. And I'm finding that as I do things with joy, it makes it so much easier. It makes my practice easier. Now, you might say to me, well, that's okay, but I've got all these problems. I've got financial problems, relationship problems, housing problems. I'm looking for a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I'm lonely. I don't have enough money. There are problems where I work. There are problems with the patients. There's problems in my church. And look at the state of our country. Look at the war in the Gulf. How can you possibly be joyful in all of that? Well, I've learned even living in a situation like Northern Ireland that you can be joyful in the middle of it. And that really helps. I don't know if you remember reading a story about artists in England some years ago were asked to paint to a nice picture as to how they saw peace. And there was to be a prize for the winner. And everybody went along to this exhibition of all these lovely paintings. And there were such beautiful paintings of lakes and rivers without a ripple in them and trees and birds. And everybody was saying, oh, that one will win, that one will win. But when the judge came to choose, he had chosen a picture of a waterfall on a wet and windy day, and it looked very rough. And everybody said to him, where's the peace? There's no peace in that picture. And he said, look at the bottom of the waterfall. And at the bottom of the waterfall was a little bird singing. And he said, that's what peace is all about.